Hello everyone. This is the title of the talk, of the lecture actually. So I'd like to start with a simple problem and then we move from there. So I'm assuming most of you are familiar with minimum vertex cover. Yes? No? Who knows what vertex cover is or minimum vertex cover is? Okay, John knows. Okay. So the vast majority knows. How very briefly, you have
there's a slim majority that don't. You understand you're at school, there's a slim majority that don't know, so if it's important, please go over it.
And make it right.
No, the majority didn't, because it's a spot. The majority knows, and the minority that don't is very difficult.
I know, wait.
I don't know. Come
on.
The judgment you have made, and I still just explain it.
Rough crowd, and it's a very rough crowd. Okay, wait, because it's on the slide. It's on the slide. Wait. Okay. So, basically, you have. Okay, what's your name?
Andrew. Andrew. That your statement, the statement you made was the majority do know, which has the implication that you probably wouldn't then cover it in detail.
No.
So I'm very sorry for
interrupting. No. And you don't need to be sorry. It's fine. Okay, but let me go on to the end of the slide. If you don't understand, then I'll start again, okay? So it's a very, very simple problem. You are given a graph. Okay, you know what a graph is?
Yes.
Just to make sure you're speaking the same language here. Okay, and the vertex cover is just a subset of the vertices. Such that for each edge, one of the vertices is in the set. So that's a cool one. And the problem I'm interested in is a minimum vertex cover. Okay? So find the vertex cover of minimum size. Okay? So for this example, and this is just for Andrew, what is the minimum, give me a vertex cover.
You want me to give you one?
Yes.
The whole, everything minus set minus 3?
Yes, for example. So, I have two examples here. Let me, for example, a vertex cover is V2, V3, V4. Because any edge is covered. Okay? And of course, the minimum vertex cover in this case is U1, because if you pick this, you are covering all the edges. So this is the problem. Okay? And it's of course a nice optimization problem, it's NP hard. When I say NP hard means I can reduce the problem to, to this problem, the distribution version, of course. And I would like now to start modeling with saturated things. Okay? So, in this case, what I'm going to do is what's called pseudo-Bolonov image, PBO. And this is different from the PBO from the previous talk. Notice the B. The B tells everything. So this is pseudo-Bolonov optimization. And essentially, for this problem, again, minimum vertex cover, we are going to create a bunch of variables, one for each vertex, such that if xi takes value 1, then it's in the set. Okay? And so basically, for each edge, I just say, well, one of the two variables has to be true. That's easy. And the objective function is to minimize the two variables that are the two xi variables, so minimizing the number of variables in the set. Yes? And so this is your pseudo-Bolonov optimization problem. So this is the type of problems you are interested in this talk. So I'm assuming it was very clear for everyone, because even Andrew allowed me to continue. But so this is the cost function, and these are the constraints. In this case, just a simple CNF form. Yes? Can I continue? Okay, great. So what are the types of problems we are going to talk, great to talk about today, is linear optimization over Boolean domains. Okay? Now, as with most things, it actually can be not quite just linear optimization. Sometimes you allow it to be mildly non-linear, we allow for some Boolean operators, and that, but I'm not making over that here. But if you go, for example, to the pseudo Boolean evaluation website, you'll see that in some cases you can have non-linear optimization, mildly non-linear. Okay? And there are lots of ways to do optimization with Boolean domains. So we can do maxa, maximum satisfiability, we can do pseudo Boolean optimization, and there are, for historical reasons, we call it pseudo Boolean optimization. Technically, it should be called 0-1 ILP, but I'll use just the one here, okay? And we can use the weighted Boolean optimization, and if you challenge me, I'll explain later on what this means, but this is yet another way to model optimization problems. And what I'm going to sort of mention is that you can map each problem to each other with reasonable transformations. Okay, so this is one of the things I'm going to talk about. Now, there are a bunch of other problems, so optimization in SMT. SMT people have been talking about SMT. You can also do optimization in SMT, optimization in CSP, and of course, in future linear programming. So the focus of the talk are these problems. Sometimes I'll mention these ones. Okay? So, so what are the take-home messages? We'll start with the take-home message, so at least you'll understand the take-home message, and then we'll see what else. So there are different ways of representing linear optimization problems, which are essentially equivalent, and I'm going to talk about that. So when we talk about pseudo Boolean optimization or maximum satisfiability or weighted Boolean optimization, if you challenge me, I can convert one to the other and vice versa, and I'm going to show some examples. These days, optimization algorithms can and do build on such solver technology. This should be, we would expect this to be natural, but it's not quite natural, and I'm going to explain why this is not always natural. So we can use pseudo Boolean optimization up here, or we can use what's called core guided max attack. Now, this is, most of the people in the room don't know what this is. I'm going to talk about this later in the talk. And of course, all algorithms that I'm going to talk about are for max SAT, but I could extend them readily to max SMT. Why? Because I'm using a SAT solver as a, for most of the algorithms I'm going to talk about, I'm using a SAT solver as an oracle. Okay? And I could use an SMT solver as an oracle. Yes?
Could you explain the difference between DBO and SAT?
Yes. Right now?
When it will be appropriate?
In two slides. Okay. So right now, it's just, I already mentioned what pseudo Boolean was very briefly, but I'm going to define all this, hopefully, define everything carefully. Let's see. So this is the outline of the talk. So I'm going to start with defining this thing. So you're calling us, okay, so what is all these things? And then the first thing I'm going to do is try to define them so that everybody understands what we're talking about. Then I'm going to give you example of applications. Why? Because these things are used in practice. Okay, so I'm going to give complete examples, and then I'm going to list a bunch of them. I'm going to do three complete examples. Then I'm going to talk about fundamental techniques, because we are going to use SAT solvers as black boxes, but to do that, we need a lot of work, okay? And for that, we need what's called fundamental techniques, and I'm going to talk about that. Then practical algorithms, and then, of course, even though this is a lecture, I'll try to sell my stuff and show you some results, conclusions, and what is research areas in this topic. So let's start with Boolean optimization. So what is maximum satisfiability? So that was the first one, right? Because pseudo Boolean are already covered, but I'm going to cover more of that. So you are given the CNFON. Question to everyone, is this formula satisfiable or not? Come on. Come on, it's usual. Last year, actually, to tell you something, last year, it's not, right? There are lots of ways to prove this inside, lots of ways. And let me see if I can do, actually I have it in case everything fails, but I can resolve this one with this one, I can resolve this two, right, I can resolve this one and then resolve this one, here I just get x2, not x2 and then, okay, so I should have, this should be an unsat, this is itself, this is already unsat by itself, I don't need this part, so the form is unsatisfiable, so what is maxsat? When you have a problem that is overconstrained, so it's unsatisfiable, you want to find an assignment that maximizes the number of satisfied problems. Okay? So for the above formula, so notice that I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 3, 12 clauses. There is no way I can satisfy more than 10 clauses. Okay, so well, of course you can ask, how did I get to this result? And the answer is that you have to wait until the end of the talk, later in the talk I'll show why it's 10. Okay? But right now, immediately you can conclude that you cannot do 12, right? You cannot do 12. That, everybody agrees? There is no way I can do 12. Okay? So, at least 12 I know I cannot do. Maybe I can do 11 or less, 10. So I'm claiming it's 10, later on I'll show you it's 10. Okay? So, of course, this is the simplest version of MaxSat. There are a number of variants, and so the variants come here. So MaxSat is like this. All clauses are soft. When I say soft means, I can allow the clauses not to be satisfied. Okay? So there are two variants. They are essentially equivalent. But later on, I'm going to talk about one of the variants, and I want this to be clear from right now. So I can talk about maximizing the number of satisfied soft clauses or minimizing the number of unsatisfied soft clauses. Okay? And usually, when we talk about MaxSat, we focus on this one here, minimizing the number of unsatisfied soft clauses. OK? Okay? Any question? It's a good question. Okay? Partial max out. Sometimes I have problems where some clauses are really important and I want to satisfy them. So I call them the hard clause. I must satisfy them. And then I want to minimize the number of unsatisfied soft clauses. Okay? So that's another variant. Sometimes I have weights. So sometimes I can associate weights with soft clauses. And essentially, I want to minimize the sum of weights of unsatisfied clauses. Everyone with me? So, okay, good. And finally, I have weighted partial max sat. So that means weights associated with soft clauses, hard clauses, I must satisfy. And then I want to minimize the sum of weights of unsatisfied soft clauses. Okay, so these are essentially the known variants of max sat. Everybody with me? Still? Okay. So usually I don't distinguish between them, but if necessary, please just ask. Okay? Now, I usually don't use this slide, but since John started the day and said, I have to have the more theoretical slide. Usually I don't use theory, so if this, I don't even have references. So, of course, the first one I can even prove, okay? No, that one I can prove. Some of the other ones I don't. I've never done that, so it won't just believe me when I show you. So, the decision version of max sat is NP-complete. This is a trivial proof, right? Everybody knows that. Solving max sat, usually people talk about solving max sat with calls for sat oracle. And then we have this characterization. So the word unweighted max sat is delta 2p log n complete. This means you need a logarithmic number of calls to a sat oracle to solve the problem. And weighted max sat is delta 2p complete. So you need a linear number of calls to a sat oracle. Okay? And of course, when I say linear, it's on the side of the instance, in terms of representation. Okay, so the clause is not variables, it's representation. Why? Because when I'm talking about weighted, I also have to represent the weights of the clauses. Okay? No, so here I don't have a reference. Again, I'll try to find the right references for the final version. So when we talk about max sat, this is what we use. We use not just a clause, we use a weighted clause. So basically, this is a set of literals, or the junction of literals, a clause. And then I have a non-negative weight, wi, or infinity, or top, which is the cost of not satisfying the clause. Okay? If I cannot satisfy that clause, I have a cost. I pay a cost for that, okay? And basically, I'm given, the form is essentially a set of weighted clauses, and I can have two types of clauses. I have soft clauses of this form, where this is less than infinity, and so I have some cost if I don't satisfy, or and I can have hard clauses, so where I have infinity as cost, and these clauses I must satisfy. Everybody with me until now? Yes? Okay. So let's go back to the minimum vertex over. And can I? Yes? Okay, good. So let's go back and now model with max sat, because first I model with pseudo boolean, and now let's how we do this in the max sat paradigm. Okay? So again, we start the same way, variables. For each vertex, I have a variable. One, it's one if I'm in the set. The hard clause means xi or xj. What does it mean? I must have one of the vertices. I have to pick one of the vertices for each edge. Okay, it's hard. I have to satisfy this. Okay? And the soft clauses are not xi, meaning I would prefer, if I could, I would prefer not to have them in my selected set. So basically, this means I prefer not to include vertices in the set group, if I could. Okay? So this leads to this nice model where I have the hard clauses. So basically, for example, for this one of them has to be picked, it's here. For this one has to be picked, it's here. And for this one has to be picked, it's here. Okay? This is, I must satisfy, those are hard clauses. And then, ideally I would like not to put any vertices in set U, but of course that is not enough. It's not possible, but I'm going to put as few as possible, and those are my soft clauses. Okay? So hard clauses, soft clauses. Clear? Example? Please, sometimes this looks very clear to some people, and it's not clear to others, so if you don't understand, just ask questions. Okay? Can I continue? Yes? Okay.
Just reiterate the not at soft clauses.
So I would like to say, suppose I can satisfy all of them. This means I'm not going to use vertex 1, vertex 2, vertex 3, vertex 4. So ideally, I would like not to include in set U any of these vertices. Okay? Of course, I cannot satisfy that. So this is over constrained. And now I'm going to find the best solution.
You want the minimum coverage, yes.
Okay. Now, lots of questions. Good. Thank you, Andrew. Yes.
I have just in mind, because since you spoke about the minimum coverage, I have in mind that the DGSO so we agree this is not the same problem that finding the minimum coverage of the graph regarding the edge.
It's a vertex cover. It's not edge cover, it's vertex cover.
So this is not the same problem.
No. This is okay. Vertex cover is, I don't even know what edge cover is. I know a variant, but it's not, okay. A vertex cover is a well-known problem and we complete study most.
Because for instance, we make a minimal coverage using a spanning tree or something like that.
Right. Now here we, okay, so I define this at the beginning, but essentially, for each edge, I need to pick one of the vertices. And that's a good, okay? And of course, I want to find the minimum cardinality cover. There was another question, yes?
Yes, you always want to minimize the number of vertices, right? So I don't really know why you have to put it all in soft covers.
Well, because I'm going to leave to the SAT solver to pick which ones you can satisfy here and which one you cannot satisfy in the best possible solution. So it's obvious, in this example, it's obvious that I cannot satisfy all of them. I cannot have a cover for this graph taking out all the vertices. There is no way to do that. So I leave, now this is my model. The max sat solver will go around and try to find a solution, and eventually we'll find one that will satisfy as many clauses as possible here. And so this means taking out as many clauses as possible from set 2. Okay? Good, but like this, I want to finish in time. So now let's go back. Someone asked me a few minutes ago, okay, what is that about pseudo-Boolean? So this is a definition of pseudo-Boolean. So we start with, again, pseudo-Boolean optimization is different from, it's a different PBO, okay? Pseudo-Boolean constraints, you have Boolean variables, always Boolean variables, and you have a bunch of inequalities, okay? It doesn't matter the sign. The usual word we present is it's a sum of some literals, and the literals can be available on each complement, has to be greater than some value, VI, which are, everything is, can be made positive. And I'm not going to talk about in detail, but again, if you challenge me a lot, I could spend some time on the world doing that, but hopefully not, okay? And the objective is to minimize some cost function, linear cost function, subject to satisfying all this linear inequality. Okay? So this is your pseudo-Boolean problem, and now the question is, okay, so but this is really different from Maxsat, right? How can we go about going from Maxsat to pseudo-Boolean vice versa? Okay, and that's what I'm going to talk about next. So the first is the easy problem. I'm going to solve Maxsat with pseudo-Boolean. Okay? So I start with a Maxsat problem. For example, in some cases it's much more natural to model with Maxsat. Right? And now suppose I model with Maxsat, but I have a pseudo-Boolean solver nearby, and that's what I can use. So how do I do that? And essentially what I'm going to do is create a new formula starting from the original form. And notice that I'm assuming everything is unwritten, and I'm explaining what this means later on. Okay? So I'm going to replace each clause by a relaxed version of the clause. So if I essentially this means if I cannot satisfy the clause, I'm going to relax it. Okay? That's what the variable RI means. Okay? So I use a fresh relaxation variable for each clause. And of course it's not trivial to satisfy this formula. If I just relax up every clause, how do I satisfy the formula?
Satisfy all the RIs.
I just put all the RIs to one. It's here.
Yes.
Okay? But yes, that's I can do that, of course, but that's not what I want. What I want is to minimize the cost function, the sum of the RIs. What does this mean? What does it mean to minimize the sum of the RIs?
You choose as many CIs as possible.
Yes, you try to satisfy as many CIs as possible, so you're solving the Maxsat problem. Okay? Very good. Very, very good. Okay? And so this is just an example. We start with the formula, nothing special here. And again, this is just say this junction, then you have a good conjunction. You relax everything, and this is your cost function. We're done. Okay? Very, very easy to do. And so if I give you some Maxsat problem, it will take you a few seconds to generate the equivalent pseudo-Boolean problem at the cost of adding a few more variables. And this is not just a few. It can be a lot more variables, so there is this trade-off here, but you can do it if necessary. Okay? And of course, the mapping is linear, not a problem. But there are many more variables in the problem. Can I continue? Yes? Okay, now let's go to the general case. The general case means I have weights. So I'm being able to assume I have R clauses and I have weighted clauses. Now the question is, how do I do it in this case? Okay, if there was an exam, I could challenge you. Nobody has a clue? No? Of course, I just have to take into account. So essentially, what I need to do is basically, let's start from the bottom. So each hard clause is kept. I don't touch it. I have to satisfy the hard clauses. Each soft clause is now relaxed, and I create a term in the cost function for that. So if I cannot satisfy the clause, I have a penalty that I have to pay. Okay? And so this is basically this is modified. This is exactly as it was originally. It's here, and then I just leave it on. That's it. Okay? Easy to do also. Very easy. Okay, good. So now, wait. Oh, something happened from one side. So this is the, I was here, right? And then what happened from one side to the other? No. It's more than that. Now I'm solving pseudo volume with maxa. Okay, so now I flipped everything. So it's very important. Okay, let me see if I did. Okay, maxat and PBO and maxat. Okay, so it's a completely different problem. So let's start simple. So this is the it's here. Okay, so this is what's called binary covering. Basically, I have a bunch of clauses here, and this is my cost function. Okay, and so basically, how do I do this? Okay, so what I do is as follows. Each clause here I must satisfy, yes? From the problem definition. So I must satisfy all of these clauses and these ones. Do I have to satisfy or not? Well, I would like to not incur cost, but if I have to incur cost, I incur cost. So the hard clauses come from the original problem here. And the soft clauses, for each cross section term, I create the soft clause in this way. Okay, who understood? I'm not even sure I understood. So, because of course, some of these examples sometimes. Okay, let's see. Because I'm trying to minimize here, I would like not. So I want to minimize, so I want the xi to be zero, so this is what I want here. And if I cannot satisfy, I have some cost, which is wy. Makes sense. Yes? So it's okay, yes. Now suppose you are more, you want to. So I started with the easy case, here it's just clauses. Suppose instead of clauses, I have general pseudo-Boolean constraints, not a problem. I have two options here. I just encode the pseudo-Boolean constraints to CNF, or I can use what's called weighted Boolean optimization. I really don't want to delve into this. If you challenge me, I can do it. But for now, since nobody's asking, let's move forward. So, but again, if I'm given a bunch of pseudo-Boolean constraints, it's easy. I just encode the pseudo-Boolean constraints to CNF. Yes.
What are the hard clauses in EBO?
They are here. All of them now are hard. You see, this is the formula, the original set of clauses,
yeah.
And now they appear here as hard clauses. You have to satisfy them.
But then what is, which
clauses
are
soft?
Yeah, exactly. Which one? They are here. Oh, so I went very fast. Sometimes I do that. It happens. So it's here, the soft clauses. It's for each cost function term, you create a soft clause. So you start to, all these clauses are hard, and then the cost function is represented by a bunch of soft clauses.
So xi is a clause, a variable.
This is a term from the cost function, and you create a soft clause with just a little, not xi, and the cost, wy. Okay? Can I move forward? Yes? Okay, because again, I know it's, again, I'm just trying to convince you, but of course, since this is a lecture, I would like to do more than that. But of course, usually there are lots of details. So if there is, again, please, if there is something that is really not clear in the back of your mind, ask. I'll try to answer. Sometimes I cannot. But I'll try to answer. Yes? Can I continue?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't see the relationship between the CIs and the XIs and how it all gets related when you go into MATLAB.
Okay, so basically, when you are here, you want to minimize this cost function and satisfy all the clauses.
So what's CI equal to?
Wait. Talk to me.
He says the CIs are equal to XI.
No,
it's not. Okay, gentlemen, I cannot lose control of the crowd, otherwise I'm in deep trouble, so ask questions to me. Okay, so it's like this. You are trying to minimize this construction subject to a bunch of clauses. You want to satisfy all of these clauses, so all of these clauses are now hard clauses. That's it. And now, what are your soft clauses? Essentially, each term here, for each term, you create a soft clause. Ideally, since you are trying to minimize, you'd prefer not to set xi to true. Okay, ideally. And so if you do not satisfy this clause, you incur a penalty. That's the cost. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Can I move forward?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, good. Yes, so let's see if I can show you some applications to get you even more motivated. Okay, so let's start with. I have two examples. One is really software, and the other is hardware, so it's life. So if you don't like hardware, just wait a few seconds, I'll be talking about software. If you like hardware, enjoy now, because then I have a software example. Okay? So this happens in practice even if you don't believe that. So suppose you start with the correct circuit, you give it to some designer in some home, like Intel. There are people from Intel here, and if it's not completely true, don't tell them now, wait until the end. And then designers fiddle with the design, sometimes they make mistakes, they switch a gate, okay, and they get an error, okay? And so what happens is that you designers also create stimuli, so you apply stimuli and you know what to expect at the output, and now when you have what's called the footy circuit or the runner circuit, you apply the same stimuli, and of course this is not valid anymore, okay? So the problem is, how do you find that this gate is wrong? So you notice that from the correct circuit, some design move this AND gate to OR gate. Okay? So how do you find this? And what people have done, and usually I put the references here, and everything that is in gray, in the end, there is a bunch of pages with all of these references, so you can go and find more details. So what you did is the following. So the hard clauses, the things that you believe, are the input and output values. You know that this is true. The input and output values, the stimuli, you know it's true. And the things you don't know whether they are real or not are the gates. So the representation of this, actually John talked about this morning, the CNF representation of the circuit using states in transformation are the soft clauses. So this is, you are going to try to satisfy as many clauses as possible, and it has been shown that the things you cannot satisfy are going to be your erroneous gates. Okay? So basically, maximize the number of satisfied clauses, so meaning the circuit gate, given the input and output values. Okay?
Is there a mistake?
Sorry?
The invalid output should be 0 and 1.
Sorry?
The invalid output should be 0 and
1. Right, that's why this is invalid. Okay, so notice that I did not change anything. Now this is no longer valid. And so you plug in these values, you should expect this, you don't get this, and then, oops, there is a problem. Then you call the design debugger, the tool, and the tool will get, I like this and say, this is where your problem lies. Okay? Yes?
Out of curiosity, but won't the wrong components interfere so that you get a garbled output?
Well, it has been shown that it's not. I don't have the details of the proof, but yes, it has been shown that that will not happen. So essentially, well, it will, essentially you can, everything that is correct, you are going to, it's not a problem, so you are going to match perfectly. Okay? The ones that have a problem for that concrete input will be shown. Okay? Now, it could tell me, oh, but for some other inputs, it might not be shown. That's true. That's why you have usually not just one pair of inputs, you have a huge bunch of them. Okay? Now, this is one example. The second example is software package upgrades with MaxApp. So I think everyone is familiar with software package upgrades. Even this morning, I was installing something when I'm preparing the talk. Oops, I have to install yet another package. So suppose, essentially, there is a lot of work in this area. You start with the universe of packages, P1 to PN, okay? And of course, what could P1? P1 could be your LaTeX, P2 could be GCC, whatever, okay? It doesn't matter. And then you associate the Boolean variable with each package. So the variable is true if and only if the package is going to be installed, okay? Now, you have a bunch of constraints associated with each package. So you have dependencies and conflicts. Dependencies are so things you must have to install PI, package PI. And conflicts are things that you must not have to install package PI. Okay? So one problem that you can think of is, okay, suppose you really want to install everything you possibly could imagine on your laptop, not that it's a good idea, but suppose you want to do that, so we call it the maximum installability problem, and you want to find the maximum number of packages that you can install. Okay? So the package constraints, these constraints here, are your hard clauses, and the soft clauses are XI. This means I'd like to install as many packages as possible. So it's a very natural type of model. Now suppose these are, for example, your package constraints. So for package 1, I'm in conflict with package 4. This means if I install P1, I cannot have P4 installed. And I need P2 or P3. P2, I need P3 and I cannot have P4. And this is, well, for P3 I need P2 and I have no conflict. For P4, I need P2 and P3 and I don't have a conflict. And so this gives you the nice MaxApp formulation. Let's see if everybody agrees with everybody saying yes already, but I've not yet explained it. So very quickly, these are the other clauses, so from the package dependencies. Concrete example, if I pick X1, I must have X2 or X3 from here, and if I pick X1, I cannot have X4. OK? okay? And they do everything for all the other packages, and the cost, the sub clauses now are x1, x2, x3, x1. So I put all the packages, and I like to satisfy as many as possible, okay? So this is another example. Everybody with me, can I move forward?
Please. So I mean that, so if I understand that correctly, that means that P4 is not installable at all, right?
Right. Yeah, but it has to be a small example to fit on the slide. But that's a very good question, thank you. Okay, now, I was not sure about this slide, so if you don't follow, I can generally, if there is a lot of protests from Andrew, I'll try to, I can always skip it. So, let me see if I can sell you this, okay? Actually, this is true, what is here is completely true. The problem is that explaining this in one slide could be a bit difficult, so let's see. MUS is an irreducible, unsatisfiable set of clauses. You know, everybody knows what MUS is? Yes, more or less? Okay. Associated with MUS is you have a bunch of other things. MCS is an irreducible set of clauses such that the complement is satisfiable. Okay? And the MSS, so this, okay, let me give the name. This is minimal unsatisfiable subset. This means minimal correction subset, and this means maximal satisfiable subset. So a subset maximal satisfiable set of clauses. Why am I talking about this? Because there are enumeration of MUS finds many applications. I have here two names and the references that come with it. So for example, I know that lots of people in buildings are familiar with global checking. Some of you, maybe not everyone, has heard about CIGAR. So CIGAR comes from Counter Example Guide to Abstraction Refinement. And hardware global checking with CIGAR, for example, has been shown, and this is the first reference here. That you can use your game by doing extracting all NUSs. So that's an example. Type inference and checking, this is the second reference. You can also use the enumeration of all NUSs. Now the question is, how do you enumerate all the NUSs? Okay, suppose I give you a formula, it's unsatisfiable. How do you enumerate all the NUSs? It's easy, right? How do you do that? Okay, if you don't answer, I'll start asking questions. So, suggestions, how do I go about to enumerate all the NUSs? Because I just showed two, I did not describe, yes? Yeah, how do you exclude, it can be messy, believe me, it can be messy. But that's a good suggestion, because that's what first people in the 80s, the first thing they tried was something like that. So actually, now, this is where I was not completely sure. Now, believe me a little, if you challenge me, I go to the board, but I prefer not to do that. So you can, how do you enumerate any OSs? And this is the reference where this is described, was you use what's called fitting set quality between MUSs and MCSs, and this is stated here. Let me read it. So an MUS is an irreducible fitting set of the formal MCSs, and an MCS is an irreducible fitting set of the formal MUSs. Why am I talking about this? Why? Because you can enumerate MCSs and then use them to compute MUSs. And the punchline is that you use MaxSat enumeration for computing all the MSSs, and for each MSS you have an MCS. Okay? So it's a lot of work, but essentially if you have a good MaxSat solver, then you can do MUS enumeration, and then you can use in this nice application. Now you can ask, is this true? Do people use this? And the answer is yes. And the next question is, do they use this in companies? Yes, in startup companies. Okay, so, what I'm trying to say is that, well, at least the idea is out there, okay? So it's not just inventing the topic. Yes? Yes. It's not MUS. So, when you start with a big formal, and SatSolver comes and gives you phi prime, and this is what's called NSAT, or unsatisfiable code. Is this MUS? No. You have to then work and generate something small, and this is your MUS. Okay? What your colleague was suggesting is, well, I can just compute one and then another. It's very messy to implement. And this is a very clean and delicate solution. So it's essentially, shortly, you don't even compute MUSs, you just solve MaxSat, enumerate MaxSat solutions until you are done, and then use the heating set quality to generate all the MUSs. And that's how it's done. The most efficient tools these days. Here and here they use this example. Okay? Yes?
No, I just ask you, out of curiosity, because I read about CIGAR.
Yes?
They use, they even use MUS.
Right, I know that. That's a good point. But I'm talking about this concrete example, and when I distribute the slides, you go here and you see where they use the old MUS.
There is some benefit for using MUS.
They claim they can get a lot of benefit, yes. So the tool actually, it has a name, so I have no interest in the company, but they have a tool called Reveal that uses exactly this approach. It exists, okay? And it is documented, so the work has stopped in 2008, and then they created this company, but yes, it exists, okay? Now, you could think, okay, three examples, that's it. No, the answer is, well, there are lots of more examples, some of them very, very interesting for some of you, I'm sure. So, for example, you can use error, you can do error localization in SQL with MaxSat, plain MaxSat. You can do, so notice the type of problems you can solve. You can, this is software engineering, then you can go to bio, so auto-typing with pedigrees, operations research, course, timetabling, combinatorial auctions, let's call it AI. Then I have this minimizing disclosure of private information credential-based interactions, so on the web. Okay, this is also a new model, MaxSat and Italian team recently. Reasoning over biological networks also. And then you can go for even, so if people model with binary covering in the show, you could model also with MaxSat, you can do a prototype inference, digital field design, so on and on and on. So there are easily hundreds of applications of either pseudo-Boolean or MaxSat. Okay? So let's talk about fundamental techniques. Now this is a big part because of the solvers that I've used more recently, and when I go to reach the end of the talk, you'll understand why I spend a lot of time on fundamental techniques. Okay? So what are the techniques? Techniques you'd like to use is, and they have been used, you can use unit propagation, and John this morning talked a little bit about unit propagation. You can use it for computing lower bounds in branch and bound MaxSat. And I'm going to have a slide later on about branch and bound MaxSat. You can use stochastic local search for computing upper bounds, so find just reasonable solutions to your problem. And essentially, you can use a stochastic local search for that. You can use uncertified also forms, of course, in core-guided MaxSat algorithms. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time here because this is supposedly given for free by a SAT solver. But we don't usually care about the calling. We just wait for the SAT solver, like Ring or others, to provide the course and work from that course. And then we need extremely CNF encodings, so kernel constraints and suitable constraints. And I'm going to spend a bit of time with encodings. Okay. Now this is useful not just someone this morning already talked about this. It was you, John.
What
is that? Kernel constraints, and you talked about this.
Yes.
So what I'm going to do is give you some recipes. How do you represent or encode kernel constraints and suitable constraints into CNF to CNF forms? Okay. So let's continue. Let's talk about kernel. So here I make a distinction between kernel constraints and suitable constraints. And let's start with kernel constraints. So the problem I'm interested in is how to handle kernel constraints of this form. The sum of xj's is less than or equal to k. In many applications, it's interesting in a special case, the at most one constraint, the sum of the variables less than or equal to 1. Okay? And of course, even though I'm focusing on less than or equal, I can consider any operator here. Less than or equal, equal, greater than, or equal, greater than. Okay? Now, one solution is, well, instead of using a SAT solver, we just use a pseudo-Boolean solver. The difficulty, and it has been shown over the last decade, extensively over the last decade, that it's very difficult to keep up with advances in SAT technology. You see a guy like Armin, and you understand why. There is no way you can keep up with SAT technology, so the best thing you can do is just use the SAT technology. So this is not, in MaxSat and pseudo-Boolean, these days people are not doing it. So you could use a TV solver, it's extremely difficult to maintain. So, for SAT and SAT, actually, the best solvers already encode to CNF, for example, MiniSAT Plus, for those of you that know about it. And so solution number two is encode everything to CNF and use a SAT solver, like Winlink. Okay? So this is what I'm going to spend more time because, as I tried to explain, it's very difficult for pseudo-Boolean solvers to keep up to date with the SAT solver. So the best, over the last decade, it has been shown, it's best, the best solution is to go and use to CNF. Okay? Now, so let's start equals the type of constraints. I'm going to start with a simple case and then I'm going to make it harder and hard. More complex, yes. Well, because you can handle Armin now is the expert. I used to do this stuff, but I don't do it anymore. But essentially, a pseudo-Boolean solver is solving things of the form Lij, let's call it Lj less than or equal to some Ki. Okay? So this has to be handled natively by the solver. Okay? And so this is what the PPU solver does. And this, Aaron can talk about this. So for example, oscillators can be a nightmare, lots of other problems. If you do this, if you handle this natively, constants, you have to pay a price in terms of handling constraints. So the implementation is not as clean as the SAT solver. And so people essentially don't do this these days. Okay, they used to do this. Actually, I used to do this, and I was convinced by others that that was not the way to go. So this days I go to CN. Okay? So I'm going to start easy as I was explaining, and then I move to more complicated things. So the first thing is equals one. So basically what we are going to be split into constraints, less than or equal to one, greater than or equal to one. If I have the sum of some variables greater than or equal to one, this is just a nice disjunction. And I'm totally sure John mentioned this morning also. Now, the interesting case is where you have the sum of variables less than or equal to 1. And here, then, you have a wealth of ways of doing it. And, of course, I cannot cover all of them. And actually, John, this morning, what he called, showed was encoding of what's called the pairwise encoding. Okay? So it's, you require n squared clauses, and so that you don't need auxiliary variables. And over the years, people have proposed a huge number of approaches. So you can use what's called a special count. Right now, I'm not going to talk about it, but it has much fewer clauses, but of course you have to use variables. And the bitwise encoding, and of course the nice call is because I'm going to talk about it in the next slide. And so you pay a price in clauses, not a lot, but you save in variables. Okay? And of course this goes on and on, so I cannot cover everything. Yes?
Question about this encoding. Can't we just encode the last one by the first one with the negation of the second one?
Probably. I never thought about that. You know what the bitwise encoding is?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, so now so it's very different. So they are very different.
No, because it's the information.
Oh.
Yes. It's about how to encode this.
Oh, but this one, you encode with this one, which is this one. That would not, it doesn't work out. So if you are trying to solve this one, you extend like this.
Yes, it's okay for
it. And then you need this two. You need this two. You need this one and this one. Yes, the third one here.
Yes, the third one can be is equivalent to the first one or the negation of the second one.
I know, but the first one
was expressed in case of.
Yes, but the first one you don't have a chance. You don't know how to encode it. You encode it like that. Okay. So actually, you could go and have dedicated encoding. Actually, there are dedicated encodings, but it doesn't give you anything. So essentially, what you do when you are given this, you encode like this. And that, you know, to represent this one is where nightmare begins, okay? So it's much more complicated, okay? But actually, that's a good question because there are dedicated encodings, that's the dots here, but it doesn't really matter, okay? Because these days, when you see papers, they use, well, actually, they tend to use one of these or variants of this, okay? Now, I'm going to talk about the sequential counter at a later stage. Now I'm going to talk about bitwise encoding. So basically, what I'm going to do is as follows. Let's see if I can. Let's see if everyone is with me. Now, I'm going to encode in general case, the sum of some variables less than or equal to 1, and it's called the bitwise encoding. And this is my example, x1 plus x2 plus x3 less than or equal to 1. Okay? So the first thing you do is you create a set of auxiliary variables, and so let's call them v0 to vr minus 1, and r is the logarithmic of the number of variables. And this will make sense shortly. Okay? Now, if xj takes one of these variables takes value 1, then these variables encode the binary encoding of j minus 1. It's shown here. So for example, suppose here, if this variable is true, then the variables have to encode 0, which is 0, 0. If this variable is true, then they have to encode 1, 1, which is 0, 1. And if x3 is true, they have to encode 2, which is 1, 0. Is this clear for everyone? Yes? So the question is, how do you do this? And this is already shown, part of it is shown here. So basically, if x is true, then v0 has to be equal to v0, etc. Vj minus 1 has to be equal to vj minus 1. This gives you this. And so after a little bit more work, essentially you get this binary clause, where the literal is either a variable or its negation. And it's shown here. Okay? So let's see if this makes sense. And of course, I can put the rest. So because I'm not going to do a lot of proofs, but I can try to convince you. So suppose x1 takes value 1. What happens? If x1 takes value 1, this is 0, right? And so V1 must be 0 and V0 must be 0. So I'm encoding this value. And what happens to the other ones? Well, I don't actually know what happens to the other ones. What I can show is that I cannot, the V's cannot encode anything else because they are already encoding 0, 0. And so the other variables must be 0. So essentially, I'm satisfying that only one of them can be 1. Is this clear? Now, you could tell me, wait, and if all the variables are 0? Well, if all the variables are 0, it's paralyzed because then I don't have any constraint. I'm satisfying everything. So I can put any value on the V variables. Okay? So this gives you the n log n because, well, you have log n here, so that's where it comes from, and the number of auxiliary variables. Now, was this clear? Yes? Who understood this? So you tell me where did I go wrong? I did not go wrong, sorry, in the sense that you could not follow. Where did I lose you? Probably around here, right? I move very so essentially, okay, let me do it slowly. Of course at some speed. So essentially I'm saying if the variable is true, then I imply this that the V0 equals V0, so that this is actually, let me explain this. This is the binary encoding of J minus 1. So for this case, for X1, if X1 is true, then the V0s have to encode 0, 0. Okay? So essentially I'm saying that V0 has to be equal to V0, V0 in this case is 0, and V1 has to be equal to V1, which in this case is 0. And so basically, I can explain the implication. So this is negation of xj and everything else. Okay? And since, notice that this is a conjunction, I can use the distributive law, and essentially I get just a bunch of binary clauses. So I notice that I have one for each variable, so I have a bunch of binary clauses for each variable. That's it. Okay? And essentially, it's not xj for each variable, or some little, which depends on the value. If the value is 1, I have the variable. If the value is 0, I have the negation of the value. It's just Boolean algebra, nothing else. Okay? And this is exactly what I did here. So notice, for example, let's do another example to see if I convince you. Suppose x3 is 1. What happens if x3 is 1? If x3 is 1, I need to encode the variables v1 and v2, need to encode 1, 0. So if x3 is 1, so this is 0, this is 0, v1 must be 1, and v0 must be 0. Okay? And so since this is 1 and this is 0, the other combinations are no longer possible. This means that x1 and x2 must be 1. Sorry. Now, must be 0. Thank you. Okay? Yes? And so, it's more or less clear, yes? Now, I picked this one because it's the most interesting one and, of course, the most challenging one. Okay? Can I move on? Yes, question.
Are you going to use this for each j?
Yes, of course. So this is x1, x2, x3. So if I have more variables, if I have 100 variables, not a problem. I just, sorry. Okay, I just have to put more variables here, and then I have many more clauses, but it's fine. Okay? Let's move on. Okay, so, well, as I said, we started easily, and now we are going to go to a next step. Next step is cardinal constraints. And for cardinal constraints, we have a huge number of ways of encoding cardinal constraints. Now, here I'm going very carefully because, I'll explain shortly. So you can use special counters, and I'm going to talk about this shortly. You can use BDDs. I'm not going to talk about them, not because Fabio is here, because when I talk about pseudo-1, then I have BDDs. Then I'm going to try to convince you of sorting networks, and this is never easy. Then cardinality networks, this is very, notice that it's very recent work, and pairwise cardinality networks, and this is even more recent work, okay? So it's a very active field, area of research, and of course, some of them it will take me a lot of time to go, actually, I don't even understand this one yet, so, okay. Nothing like being honest, but I think I'm fairly okay until here. After that, it's getting more, but of course, I didn't have a lot of time yet. So let's talk about these two here. So how does it work? Now, the vision I would like you to keep is that essentially you are just going to count in unary. So I'm representing some s here, some s here, etc. And each s is represented in unary. Okay? So sa is just the sum of the Si is the cell from j plus 1 to I of the xj. Okay? But I'm summing in unary. Okay? And so essentially, how do I do it for a given I? It's like this. So for the first bit, it's the previous one, or if the variable is true. As soon as the variable is true, I have to count it. Okay? And for each other j, it's just a disjunction. Or already it comes from the previous. So essentially, think about this one, for example. Either it already comes, so the jth position already comes here as a 1, or it's the previous one, the minus 1, or, and I have this one at 1. I'm not sure if I'm making a lot of sense. It's never easy to explain this, but let me try it in a slightly different way. Let's think about this one here. So how can this one here be true? What does it mean, this one S22 to be true? What does it mean? If I was clear in my explanation, and since I was not, it should mean that I already have seen two ones. I'm counting ones, right? So if this is true, I've seen two ones. How did I see two ones? Well, in this case, I don't have a lot of... Let's assume... Okay, so, very quickly, it's the same example, but now I put here the box for x3, s3, 1, s3, 2. Now, my question is, how can this be true? How can this one here be 1? Essentially, it means, if this is 1, I've seen 2 ones. How can I have seen 2 ones? Either they came already from before, or this one is contributing to the count. Okay? How am I modeling that? So I'm here, so I'm in this position, either it comes already from previous count, or I already had 1, and now I see another 1. You see what I'm saying? Yes? Okay, good. And of course, I continue, and eventually, I want all of these VIs to be 0. Okay? So essentially, when I notice that I stop at k, and I cannot have k. Why? Because I cannot have k and another one equals 1. Because if I have k and another one equals 1, then I'm not satisfying the cardinality constraint. Okay? So basically, I just have to encode all of these equations to CNN. And this is, this is what I show here. So basically, it's just a huge bunch of clauses. And let me go back. I have to go for, there is no other solution. So basically, these conditions here are encoded here as clauses. Okay? Now, John talked about this morning. I'm not going into the detail, but of course, each one of them can be represented by a bunch of clauses. So for example, here I need 3 clauses, here I need 3, and then plus 3, and then here I can probably simplify, and this is the final simplified result. Actually, if you pay attention to the color, this is green, so this means that these two come from that green part. Okay? Now, in the end, you get O and K clauses and variables. Is this more or less okay? You got the idea. It's really okay. Let's continue, because there is another one that is easier. Okay, so now I understand why last year I did not talk about this one, because I was more sensible. Okay, so this is sorting networks, and here what I'm going to do is just show you. It's a very elegant definition, very, very elegant. The problem is that you have to imagine that you just use a very nice recursive definition. So basically, it's like this. Well, again, we use a unary representation, and we are going, in this case, just one of the simplest cases, we use what's called odd-even merging networks. And they started many, many years ago, okay? So basically, what we do is we use a recursive definition of merging networks. And the base case, essentially, you just compare two bits. And essentially what you say is that C1 is the max of the two, and C2 is the min of the two. And think about that. Suppose you are trying to sort these two. So when I say sort, is that you have A1 and B1, and they can be 0 or 1. How do you sort them? Think about it. How do you sort them? Essentially, what you do is that if you are going to sort them with... the first one, so sorting means the first are the ones and then are the zeros, you pick the max. Okay, and then for the next one you pick the min. Is this clear? So if you just have one, if you have a single one, that's where you are going to get it, and here you are going to get the zero. Okay? And if you have two ones, not a problem, if you have two zeros, not a problem also. Okay? So that's the simplest, and it's called the best case, and now you can now do merge recursively. And then you get the general case. Okay? Now, It's exactly the same. It's exactly the same. Everything is just, we just call this recursively and until you get the base case. Nothing, I'm assuming you are familiar with recursive definition, and that's it. So just, but with any case, you just call it backwards until you get, you hit the base case, and in each case, you need to do some additional, and you are just using means and maxes, and that's, it's essentially it's the same, exactly the same thing. Okay? More or less clear? The problem is that I've not yet done. Because then the sorting is again a recursive definition. Okay? Now, so it's shown here, and it's exactly the same. So the base case is just a merge, and then you have, you assume that this is given, and you know how to do this, and then you construct the general case. Okay? And now, finally, the outputs you have to put after k, you put everything to zero, everything else you don't constrain. So just, I'll show you the example. So if you start with four variables, this is the network you are going to get. Okay? And of course, if you ask me, okay, how do you do this? Very easy. You start with the general case, so it's 2n greater than 2, so you apply, you call sort twice. Okay? So let me, oh, sorry. So notice that here, what you do is you are here, and you do this one and this one. Okay? And then you are going to do this one and this one. Let me go back. And this is the, so one of them is here, the other one is here. And then you have to merge them, and this is where you have to merge the network. And of course, you need to sort recursively, and that's what's shown here, and that's what's shown here and here. Okay, and this is already the base case. Okay? Now, I know it's a lot of abstraction, but believe me, this is the way it works. Okay. Now, I showed you the complexity before. Why am I talking about this? Because, okay, let me explain why I'm talking about this. I'm talking about this because you get a lot of nice, and the complexity is extremely nice. So I showed you the spatial count is nk, and then you get sorting networks, you get n log squared of n. And it's a minor improvement, you get n log squared of n. Okay, so it pays off to have all this ingenuity at work. Okay? So this is covered, more or less, this is covered, more or less, and this is, well, this wasn't fine. Let's talk about pseudo-Bohm constraints now. And so for pseudo-Bohm, there is also a lot of work. And notice that, again, I want to emphasize that you may think, oh, all of this is well established. No, it's not. No, it's not. And actually, one of the authors of this one is in Jones, okay? I'm not going to point. I'm not sure if you want me to point at him. But this, all of this is extremely recent work. So let me see, try to explain what is going on. So you can just use what I call the operational encoding. So it's just encode the operations. And this has been around for the last 14 years, okay? The problem is that what I call the operational encoding is very efficient, but you don't preserve our consistency, meaning you don't propagate as much as you could propagate quickly. Okay? You can use BDDs, it gives you a worst case expression number of causes, but you have our consistency. And personally, for many years, honestly, I thought that was it. You could not guarantee our consistency in polynomial space. And then these guys, and I'm not going to point at him again, prove that you can do it actually in polynomial. So you have a polynomial representation, and you have, our consistency. So it's here, okay? You get, it's a lot of clauses and a lot of variables, but it's polynomial, okay? Never worse than polynomial. And of course, using this work, last year people at the SAT conference showed that you can even improve this and get a little, take a little bit, so this log n goes away, okay? So if for those of you not familiar with this, it means that you can essentially have a nice encoding of pseudo-Bohm constraints that gives you all the propagation you can think of. Well, all the propagation you can think of, yes. And it's polynomial space. Okay? Now, let's see BDDs. Why BDDs? Because, well, we have an expert in the audience, so this is not quite BDDs. It's just we call it BDDs. Okay? So I'm explaining already so that I don't get crushed afterwards. So I'm going to encode this. So notice that I have 3x1 plus 3x2 plus x3 less than or equal to 3. Okay? So I want to construct a BDD for this. And what we do, and this is the poor man's approach, okay? We are going to normalize variables by decreasing coefficients in this case. So decreasing coefficients means I'm going to normalize x1, then x2, then x3. And then I'm going to construct a BDD. And I'm not calling the OR BDD. Just BDD, just to explain what is going on, okay? So basically, what happens, so essentially I come here and say, what are the possible values for x1? Now, this example, you should be able to understand, because even I can understand, so it should be easy enough. So, I'm going to try all the possible values and see what happens in terms of, am I satisfying this constraint or not? Okay? So let's see. What happens if I go to the left branch? So x1 takes value 1. What happens here? Immediately, I'm in trouble, right? I already, this means that here I have 3 and here I have 3, so that means I don't have a lot of freedom on x2 and x3. So if x2 takes value 1, I have a conflict immediately. And if x2 takes value 0, that's good, not a problem. If x3 takes value 1, I'm in trouble again. And if it takes value 0, not a problem. And on the other side, I have more flexibility. So if x1 is 0, oh great, so this one doesn't count anymore. If x2 takes value 1, I'm again in trouble. Let's see what happens. So if x3 takes value 1, oops, conflict. If it takes value 0, not a problem. And if it takes x2 takes value 0, it doesn't really matter what happens next. I satisfy the constraint, yes? Now, what do you do with this? Essentially, what you do with this is we use this to encode a circuit. Okay? And this is the circuit you get. So, basically, you can use this each node here as ITE means if and else. So basically, for example, I'm assuming there are no bugs. So for example here, if x3 takes value 1, 1, otherwise it propagates 0, and I want the output to be 1, to be satisfied. I want to satisfy the constraint. So what happens? If I'm able to propagate 0 to the output, I have a conflict, of course. So that's what I'm saying here. Yes? Is this clear?
No.
So I can try. I can try. So let's see. Let's see. So basically, I'm going to use these zeros and ones to propagate values and generate either conflicts or satisfy everything. Okay? So for example, here x3 with zero I'm okay. But with one, I'm not okay, so I propagate to a zero inside. And if eventually I'm able to get there, I have a conflict. Okay? I'm saying it's not valid. Okay? Of course, right now I don't know. X3 by itself is not imposing anything, it depends on the other values. Let me try to explain what I'm saying. If x3 takes value 1 and x2 takes value 0 and x1 takes value 1, I have a constant. And that's true. If this takes value 1 and this takes value 1, I'm not satisfying the constant. Okay? So that's what I'm saying there. Yes? That could go on and on. Now, this is a nice simple example, so I'm assuming everybody is understanding. If not, just raise your arm. Amazing. Okay, can I continue? Okay, I'm assuming yes. Okay, wait. Oh, here. And so, of course, let me go back. So, of course, there are lots of redundancy because I have lots of constants. I can remove the constants, filter out the constants away, and so this is what I get in the end. Okay? It's a very, very simple circuit for this suitable constraint. Are you with me? Yes? Yes.
Why exactly do you create a circuit? Why can't you just prove the
You could actually, that's a good, yeah, this is for pedagogical reasons, okay? I'm just trying to motivate what is going on. Because if I show just this, I'm not sure if I was convincing everyone. And see, here I can explain all the paths easily, okay? But in practice, yes, you just propagate everything, trying to filter out as much as possible, okay? Yes. And actually, there are lots of other things you can do. I'm just showing you the big picture. Here, in this case, in the first case, so the starting network I gave you the recursive definition, that's what you use. Here, I'm just giving you the big picture to see how it works. Okay? So, now, and this is something actually. I can talk about this. So basically, suppose now that I give you. We talked already about equality. Suppose I give you a pseudo Boolean constraint that has an equality. So you want it to be equal to k. How do you go about and do it? Yes? Yes? If nobody answers, how do you go about and do it?
The same as before with the last
oh. Yes, of course. So what you do is, of course you can use greater than or equal to and less than or equal to, but yeah, so it's a but. So in this case, it's. So basically, notice that this is a subset sum constraint. For those of you that don't know it, well, it's a special case of the knapsack constraint. So it's well known that you cannot find all consequences in polynomial time. So what do I mean by this? So you can, of course, do this, but there are things that are obvious and you cannot find them by propagation. Okay. So I have an example, hopefully. So let's see this example. Let's see. This was created last time. So if it does not work, I want the crowd to be controlled. I'll fix it. So basically, of course, I can, since I had equality, I replaced by two kernel constraints. Now let's, now this is the tricky part. Let's assume, okay, the most brilliant minds in the audience don't, I'm assuming it's working, but again, it's really fresh. So this takes value zero. So what happens now? If this takes value zero, what can you conclude? There is no way you can satisfy. But if you look at this, it's not obvious at all, right? Because either constant can still be satisfied. Either any of these constants can still be satisfied. The simple cannot satisfy both of them, right? Oops. And so that's the bottom line. So it seems nice, as Andrew was pointing out, you just do this, right? Not a problem. Not quite. Okay? So essentially, there is no way you can do it. Well, unless everything we know about computational complexity falls, you cannot do it. Okay? Are you with me? Yes? Lots of questions. Yes, Pete.
But so that you can't do it, but I guess if the coefficients are small, you can because it's not strong enough.
Right. So of course, of course. So yeah, that's a very good observation. So this is the general case. Of course, what Pete is saying is that you can use what's called a pseudo-polynomial approach and just do it. Of course, but in general, this is of course interesting when you have these huge coefficients and then it's not number two. But that's a very good question. There was another question. Yes.
You can fix at least that one. If you use PDEs, then you could say only the branch where the sum is 5, you say it's equal to 1 and all the others have to go to 0.
That's a very good point. And what I'm saying is that, that's a very good point. But what I'm saying is that going from here to here is a problem. Okay, that's the point.
Sure.
Yeah, of course you could do other things, of course. I'm just showing that if you were to use off-the-shelf things that you already have, this is an issue, okay? And then, well, I'm trying to say this because until last year, some people were not completely familiar with this, even myself. Okay, so continuing.
So the message in that slide is it just doesn't work. That's what I should take away.
Yeah, you should. So it's very intuitive, but it does not work. And actually, it's not that obvious. So it has been around, but people simply don't pay enough attention to it. So as far as I know, the work that talks about this is quite recent. Well, 10 years. For me, at least, it starts to be more or less recent. Okay, can I continue? Yes? Now, finally, we are ready to engage practical algorithms. We have a bunch of things to cover. I'm going to spend a lot of time in things I've been working more recently, and because I really believe in them, of course. But I'm going to talk about some other things. So let's start with notation. So again, notice that when I started, I said the cost of the assignment is the sum of weights of unsatisfied problems. So again, this is very, very important. Sum of weights of the things I cannot satisfy. And what I'm looking for is the optimum solution, opt. And I'm going to use opt throughout now, the assignment with the minimum cost. Okay? Cost in terms of unsatisfied things. Okay? And then I have an upper bound, so it's an assignment with cost not less than opt. And when I start with the sum of the weights plus one, because the hard process could be inconsistent. Okay? And the lower bound is no assignment with cost no larger than the lower bound itself. Okay? So that is a reference I can use. And I start with minus one because it may be possible to satisfy all soft costs. Not interesting, but it's possible. And so this is the vision I would like you to keep in mind. Very trivial, but I'm going to then massage this a little bit. So lower bound is always here, upper bound here, it can touch the optimum, lower bound never touches the optimum. Okay, in my view of the world. Okay? There are other views, it doesn't really matter. Just for consistency. Okay, yes.
Are you hunting, you actually just want one solution that
yes. I just want to get here and output the solution, an assignment that where the cost of the unsatisfied cost is up. That's the best I can do. Okay?
Even if there could be multiple
right.
So you just look for one.
Yes. And that is what's called max enumeration. I mentioned that before. Oh. Okay? And of course, there are lots of tricks you can think of, and you can talk about that offline, but yeah, I just want the first solution. Okay? Now, so let's talk about PDD for max satin pseudo volume. So, now, it's interesting, then when you are doing maxsat, you cannot use unit propagation. Right? For those of you that are not from the area, you might think, oh, what a big deal. But for us from sat, that have been around for many years, unit propagation is everything. So we use it for almost everything. And so for maxsat, you cannot use it. And let me explain why you cannot use it. So this is a CNF formula. And obviously, if you do unit propagation, this must be 1. So this must be 0, this must be 0, yes? and business you want a business, so business is used. So you want to satisfy at least two clauses. Are you with me? Yes? I can do it on the board, but it should, if you just propagate values, these two clauses you cannot satisfy. So what is, what if you do unit propagation, you think that the cost, the max sats, of the best you can do is unsatisfy two clauses. Right? But it's not true, because if you take this clause away, you can satisfy all the others. So the cost, the minimum cost is minus one, just take one clause. Okay? And so that means you cannot do unit propagation. And now that what means, well, most of algorithms in previous generations, so that until three, four years ago, they would do branch and bound search, and I'm assuming you are more or less familiar with this, but no unit propagation, and so you cannot do conflict-driven closed learning. So everything that Armin talked about this morning, when you come to MaxSat, you cannot use. Okay? Nothing. And that was the state of affairs until 4 or 5 years ago. Now it's different. Now it's different, and I'm going to talk about that later on. But this is what, there was a lot of work on, in the area, but eventually, the work stopped because see, this would not scale for industrial problems, MaxSat industrial problems, okay? Now, of course, you can do, people tried a lot of techniques, so you can use refined upper bounds using the information about empty clauses, you can estimate lower bounds, and there are a lot of techniques, you can use inference rules, and I have some references, and you can even use stochastic local search to improve the upper bounds. The bottom line is, all the techniques that have been proposed for SAT, you cannot use for branch and bound MaxSat. Okay, so everything that you heard about this morning, no can do for MaxSat. Branch and bound MaxSat. Okay, so what I'm going to do in a few slides is a different way of tackling MaxSat, where we use all of these techniques. Where essentially we use SAT solve as an oracle, and now, so we don't have to worry about this. Okay? So right now, this is the take-home message. Let me continue. For pseudo-Boolean, actually the status is slightly different. So you want to minimize, again, we have seen this before, you can do standard branch and bound search, lots of papers about that. You can refine upper bounds on the value of the cost function, so any model that you compute that satisfies the constraints is an upper bound. You can estimate lower bounds, lots of techniques, maximum dependent sets, some people here are experts on this, or pure relaxations, and essentially run the search on the lower bound greater than or equal to the upper bound. And of course you can have the native handling of PB constraints, so room constraints, and I talked about this already. And of course, and this is the most important aspect, is that whereas for MaxSat you cannot do, for pseudo-Boolean you can use all the techniques. Unit propagation, restart, yes, closed learning, you can use everything. The problem is native handling of PB constraints. Okay? So why? Because again, you cannot capitalize on all the advances that you see in SAT solving. So that's essentially the main drawback. But other than that, you don't see the same problems that I just showed you in the previous slide for MaxSat. Okay, so let's see how you solve MaxSat with iterative SAT solving. Okay. So again, let's look at this picture. And suppose I want you to go to this point. How can you start? How can you go about and do it? So essentially, one way is you refine the upper bound. So you start here, you refine until you hit the optimum. We call it linear search, starting and SAT until and SAT. Another name is strength. That's why I call it SAT and SAT. Strengthening, okay? And so that's one way. Another way is you iteratively refine the lower bound, until the lower bound equals to the optimum, and in that case you are done because you could not hit it. So if you hit it, you have the solution, and we call it linear search and SAT search. And of course, another way is you iteratively refine lower and upper bounds until the lower bound and the difference between them is one. Okay? So you can do linear search by refining here and here and here and here until it converts to this point, or you can just do binary search on the cost of unsatisfied clauses. Okay? So essentially, you are here and here, computer will meet point, and then you continue, okay? And by default, so what you can do is all soft clauses are relaxed. We talked about this early in my lecture, okay? And essentially, replace each clause by a relaxed version, and then use cardinal constraints to represent the lower bound and the upper bound. Are you with me? Yes or no?
Could you just go over what you mean by iterative and how the things change?
Yes. Can I go to the next slide?
Yeah, that's fine.
Because, all of this is true, but not for CoreGuided, and I'm going to talk about CoreGuided next. Now, you asked a very interesting question, Andrew, because That's what I had in mind. Okay. So now let's start with the first one, refining the upper bound. Okay. So essentially, you okay. So now you start here, and so essentially you say that the cost of instance, the same stuff is less than or equal to the upper bound that you already have minus one. And you call SAT solver on this. You encode everything to SAT, and I already explained how you can do that. You encode everything to SAT, call SAT solver, and SAT solver either says yes or no. So in this case, because the optimum is here, it's going to say yes. Okay, SAT. So, well, SAT, you define the upper bound, so the new bound is given by the actual values of the cost function, so you can do a big jump or not. Okay? And you continue, until you repeat the optimum. Okay? So you repeat, we find this until it becomes SAT, and of course the previous value is the optimum value. Is this clear? Okay. Now, the worst case number of iterations is exponential on instance types. Is this clear for everyone or not? Why is it exponential? It's the number of iterations. Number of iterations, not the SAT solver call. This is just the number of iterations. I can do a lot of iterations. Why can I do a lot of iterations? Because the coefficients can be very large, because the instance size captures the coefficients, and the coefficients will grow exponentially with the instance size. That's the problem, okay? Even though this is true, lots of tools use this. Minisat, SAT4J, KMaxSat use this approach. Okay, so this is number one. Clear? Can I continue? So the other one is refining the lower bound. So not a big deal. So you just, while in SAT, notice that it's different, right? Let me go back. Here it was while SAT. Different because now it's well in SAT it just go up, trying better bounds. Okay, until you hit the optimum, let me continue. And when you get to the optimum, so when this becomes SAT, this is your optimum value. Okay? Is this clear? What's the worst case number of iterations?
The same.
Very nice. Oops. So I have a problem with this. Okay, it's also exponential. Yes. Now, example tools. No known implementations, as far as I know. Why? Help me, please. Why? Yes, and such calls. You think that, right? But, and actually, that is the reason. That's my. That's because you tried. Actually, tried, and sometimes you gain. Actually, it's not. But it's exactly what Roberto explained. Because you expect such and such calls to be worse. Nobody has tried this before. Now, this is. No, it's true, but for core guided solvers, there are a lot of work that does exactly this, and we're going to talk about this. But of course, this is completely different, and actually, research topic, for those of interest, it's unclear the number of iterations is still an exponential when you go for core guided. Nobody knows. I don't know. We tried to prove it, we could not do it. Nobody has done it, and it's an open question. And I should not talk a lot about it here for obvious reasons. Okay, let's do now binary search. So, binary search is what you would expect. So you have this invariant, the lower bound at each iteration is less than or equal to the upper bound minus one. You compute the midpoint and you require that the sum, the cost of satisfying stuff is less than or equal to the midpoint, okay? And so essentially you go one way or the other. So this is just an example, in SAT. So you find the lower bound if it's in SAT. If it's SAT, you define the upper bound until you get to the invariant. When you have equality, you are done. Okay? You cannot improve that. Okay? And now the worst case number of iterations is linear on each set. Okay? No matter what weights you put, it's great. And there are counterweights Mark Sat over from 2006, Math Sat. And here it's always tentative, yes, Alexander? It's more or less what you are doing, yes? Okay? And we have an implementation that we published last year. But this is different, and I'm going to explain shortly why. Okay? Yes.
Are there problems where you don't have both a lower and upper bound if you connect to
that? You can always find lowers. Well, I cannot go back. Okay, so a lower bound is minus one, and an upper bound is the sum of weights plus one. You can always find trivial lower and upper bounds. Now, of course, if you use this algorithm, you are going to find both lower and upper bounds. Not a problem. Of course, I hesitated a little bit because in practice, you don't want to start with minus one and the sum plus one. You want to do more clever things, and that's what we do. And you are here for the SAT conference?
No.
Okay, that's a shame. One of the papers talks about ways of doing this, how to have more aggressive lower and upper ones. Okay? Yeah. So, yes.
Once you get your SAT result,
yes.
or you've
trim it down, trim it down, trim it down, you've got the point, the sweet spot you're looking for.
Yes.
From the result you get from the SAT stuff that says SAT and the testifiable assignments, can you then go back and find out which clause you didn't satisfy?
Yes, of course.
We're looking at the correct bit.
You can do actually, I mentioned that already in passing. So, if for example, if you get the SAT result, you can refine things a little bit, okay? Because you get the better upper bound. So, you have a tentative. Actually, it's here. You can do a little bit better than this, but I'm not going to mention that. But there are a lot of optimizations you can do. Yes. More questions? Yes. So the question is, what is better in practice? And can you wait until I show you the results? The answer is, none of this is better, okay? Because I'm not done yet, okay? So I'm not done yet, until 6:15, right? So I'm still plenty of time. So let's now talk about core-guided algorithms, okay? So this is recent work. It started, it started in 2006. So let me try to motivate what is core guided. It aggregates a lot of concepts. So let me see if I go through this slowly. So if you do iterative SAT solving, everything we are doing until now, you relax all the soft clauses. Now, in some problems, you can have a very large number of soft clauses, and you are going to relax everything, even if you don't have to. Okay? So that's one problem. You can have suitable internal constraints with large number of variables from the relaxation, and so with a possibly very large right-hand side. So this is going to complicate your CNF encodings, and that's what I mentioned here. So what core-guided max SAT, we are going to use unsatisfiable cores provided by SAT solver to relax clauses on demand. So I just relax what I have to relax. I don't relax anything else. And so relax clauses only when needed. And this is what we do, but some other people relax all clauses and then they just generate simpler constraints. I'm going to emphasize this first line because this is what I believe now is the trend. So you relax on demand and you just relax what you need to relax. Okay? So that actually you might think, let me show you everything. So there is a huge number of different algorithms. So I'm not going to cover all of them. I'm going to show you this one working. And you can see that it started in 2006, improvements afterwards, and then lots of algorithms and actually, someone asked the question, so some improvements are going to be described at the SAT conference. So it's a very active area of research. And so here I try to characterize what they are doing. So for example, this one can have, each clause can be relaxed multiple times. In general, most of the algorithms can only relax a clause one time. Most of them are on demand. There are variants which are not, but most of them are on demand. Here, some of them do binary search, your question. Some of them go and SAT and SAT. Some of them refine lower and upper bounds. It's crazy. So you can do lots of things. And everything here in this slide is core guided. Okay? So first you compute on subcores and then you decide what to do next. Okay? So let's go back to the example at the beginning of the talk. Now everybody should be familiar. And the question is, okay, so this is all the calls are soft, no computations. And suppose I call a SAT solver. Oh, Roberto already mentioned at the beginning of the talk that it's going to be unsat, and I already tried to explain why this part is unsat. You just resolve everything away. And so we call the SAT solver, and SAT solver nicely gives you the same. This is what I call the unsat call, okay? So you call the SAT solver on this, and it's unsat, and it returns and says, this is unsat because of this set of clauses. So this is your unsat call. So the first thing you do is, well, since I just, this is the source of my problem, this is what I cannot satisfy, this is what I'm going to resolve. I'm not going to relax everything, I'm just going to relax this part. Okay? So this is, notice that several things, okay, let me see. We are going to relax these clauses, and of course I need to constrain. So I'm going to say, I relax these clauses, and now I just allow one clause to be relaxed. Why? At most one clause can be relaxed. Why?
Otherwise your SAT solver would immediately go for easy assignment.
And yeah, we'd relax everything. And essentially, I know that I cannot satisfy all of them, so I cannot have solution 12, right? I cannot satisfy 12 clauses, and so by putting this here, I'm saying, can I satisfy 11 clauses? Okay, I'm just allowing one clause to be relaxed. So I call the SAT solver again, and, well, it returns. Now, this is, of course, this is, I'm not giving away, so of course this is at most one constraint, and we talked about at most one constraint, and here you could use any of the encodings I mentioned. So this is not sent like this to the SAT server, I send a bunch of clauses describing this, okay? Now, it returns to me now, and it says all of this is, not this is not, but this and this and this is part of the SAT code. Now, what it does is just slightly different. This is, it cannot, it doesn't need to relax this part because this is hard, it must be satisfied. So it goes and relaxes everything again. So here it relaxes it, here, 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 and notice that here it's also relaxing things that it had already relaxed. Okay? And puts in yet another atmosphere constraint. Now the question is, how many atmosphere constraints I already have? Two. So now I'm saying, so for the future, for the next SAT call, I'm saying, I can, so I prove that I can, okay, let me go back. Here I prove that I cannot satisfy 11 clauses. So now I change the problem to, can I satisfy 10 clauses? Of the original, can I satisfy 10 and relax 2? Okay? So essentially now this is SAT, and that's why I say that the solution, the max SAT solution, is 10. So I cannot satisfy, best case, I cannot satisfy the clauses. Is this clear? Yes, Steve.
So you're introducing more R variables because you want it to be incremental?
Right. So this is just one of the algorithms. So this algorithm, the way it works, you relax. Yes, every time you have a call, you have to relax everything because you are just using at most one constraint. Now, there are, this is a trade-off because I'm going to show you shortly the pseudocode. Not the pseudocode where you use... in general, you use pseudo-bound constraints, but encoding pseudo-bound constraints is much harder than encoding atmosphere constraints. So the trade-off here is you use more variables, but you have much simpler atmosphere constraints. Incremental is a very dangerous word, or loaded word. Is, are you talking about interaction with the SAT solver?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why I was not trying. I was trying to run away from the question. So yes. So the way actually the MES Encore, the tool we developed, is not incremental. I have an incremental version, it's not very efficient. I don't, well, I know why, but I'm not going to elaborate on the topic here. But it's not incremental, it's still quite good. I make sure the result is quite good. You don't have so many iterations, so you don't see the effect. There's another question? Yes. Right. Because, okay, right now, let me try to explain very quickly again. Now so basically you want to satisfy 12 clauses. You call the SAT solver, and the SAT solver tells you there is no way you can satisfy 12 clauses. 12 is, it's 4, 3, okay? So you say, okay, so that means, since I cannot satisfy 12, maybe I can satisfy 11, okay? So you relax these clauses here. You say, I just want to relax at most one. Why? Because I want to try the next solution, 11, okay? And now, you call the SAT solver again and says, you cannot satisfy 11. Okay, so next thing you relax these clauses and you put another atmosphere constraint and now you are just aiming at, can I satisfy 10 clauses?
Why don't you write that from I equals 1 to 14?
Less than or equal to 2?
Yeah, why
that's what I was explaining. So this is much easier to handle by the SAT solver than to use general cardinality constraints. Okay, so this is the perfection of cardinality constraints. These are the best ones you can get. So this is the trade-off. You put more variables, and you pay a price in terms of variables, but you gain in terms of the complexity of encoding and then of the SAT solver runtime. Okay, so this was the motivation for this work. Can I? Come on, guys. I have 15 minutes.
You shouldn't ask the question.
Sorry?
You shouldn't ask the question. Can I continue?
Okay, that's all the answers. Okay, so you.
But you only pick, you pick one set of inconsistent clauses.
Yes.
You also pick another one, right?
Oh, yes. This is given. This is given by the SAT solver. SAT solver is master here.
Okay.
So actually, we use one of Armin's solvers. It just gives us the code, and we use that code. Okay.
This because if I work on NotSAT, the literals that you add to the clauses to me. Dangerously close to activation levels.
To what?
To activation levels.
So it's a different beast altogether.
Okay.
Okay, it's a different beast altogether. And like we can talk about this offline.
Okay.
Yes, because you have a lot, you need more freedom with this. There was two more questions.
No.
Come on, guys.
Okay.
Okay, great. Let's move. Okay, so the solution. So to recap very quickly, because I think we are okay. Calls characterized by soft and hard, so this is this algorithm. While you have unsatisfiable calls, you have fresh and soft clauses, and you have an atmost non-constraint, and you repeat until sad, and the solution is the number of clauses minus the number of iterations. Just a comment, you can easily adapt this for weighted max sat, and actually it was in the same sat conference two papers talked about this, how you do this, and it's not very complicated, so you can go, it was in 2009, I hope, yes. Okay. And now let's see binary search. So this is to explain how you can do core-guided binary search. So this is plain binary search. So this is pseudo code, but it's not very, to not be very hard to follow. And I always hesitate to explain pseudo code, but I think, it should be okay. So basically, you start with an estimate of the lower bound, the upper bound, it's here, so minus 1, sine plus 1, we talked about this already. And while it's less than, so the lower bound is less than the upper bound minus 1, you compute the midpoint, you encode this to CNF, we talked about this already, you call the sats over, if it's true, you click upper bound, if not, you click the lower bound. So this is standard binary search. Okay? So nothing special here, so of course I'm assuming that you have relaxed everything. Everything has been relaxed. So that's the trade-off. Now this is what you do when you do core-guided. So core-guided means you start by not relaxing anything. Okay? You don't relax anything. And so let's see what are the differences. So you still start with the same lower bound and upper bound. Now you still have some soft clauses here. You compute the midpoint. Now the first time there is nothing to relax. Nothing has been relaxed. Not a problem. You call the sats over. Sats over is going to give you an unsat code. Why? Because you have an over-constraint problem. Not a problem. And now, the first time at least, you are it's not the sat, so you are not going to satisfy, so it's unsatisfied. And now, if you have if you don't have soft clauses, you refine the lower bound. Otherwise, you are going to relax the things that came in the code. In the unsat code. So this is where you have the relaxation on demand. Okay? And essentially, this is a trick. So, if the outcome is true, you just update the upper bound, the same as you did before. If you don't have new, if everything that you get has already been relaxed, it means you just have to improve the lower bound. You have to go up. Otherwise, you relax, and it works. It works. Okay. So I'm going to, it works in practice. So now I have just one slide before talking about results. So. We did more than that. So this is what, let me go back. So this actually should be here. We published this last year. And it's very elegant because it's core-guided and it's binary search, mixes everything. The results are quite nice. But to get the real good results, we had to do core-guided binary search with this joint code. So basically, your organization is very similar. So the code is much more complicated, so that's why I'm not showing it. I tried to convince you without showing the pseudocode. And you keep a set of disjoint and satisfiable codes. So while they are disjoint, you just keep different suitable constraints for each one. And of course, sometimes you need to join them, and we have to wait a few minutes. Okay? And of course, you need effective, and someone asked me about this, lower and upper bounds. And we explained last year, this year, how you can have good lower and upper bounds. And of course, you can integrate pruning techniques, and we have this year, we are going to talk about a little bit about that. So let me show you some results. So this is from, so disclaimer, this is from last year, and so this means being core. Notice the difference. This is very, at least for me, it's amazing, because, and again, I'm not trying to sell you anything, because it's just, I was surprised, because this is binary search. So binary search is here. As soon as we go to being core, it's this huge jump. Okay? So this is just doing it core guided. So core guided really works. And then by using the keeping cores disjoint while we can, it gives you a significant additional boost. Okay? So this is for industrial and crafted instances, and weighted. Oh, sorry, this is for unweighted. And now we also, last year we did it for weighted. And here you can also find very interesting things. For example, the final winner, and this is against the best competition. And for example, this is weighted, and in weighted, lots of instances are crafted. And so for those, some of these older algorithms I talked about during the lecture sometimes perform quite well. But notice that this algorithm is extremely robust. It starts here, the trend goes along, and eventually it really is the most robust one. Okay? So if you ask me which one should I use, or which one should you use, and the answer is, if you want the most robust one, you should use Beam Core with the disjoint technique. but miss is amazing if depending on the type of benchmark. So even though it's a winner, it's a really trade-off. Okay, so we have to be honest when we look at these pictures. Now, this is what I got last night, this morning actually, this morning. So this is the most recent results we got, and here we already have the version that we are going to present at the SAT conference. And for the SAT conference, what we try to do, so this is to show off the type of research we sometimes do. So this is, so again, Beam Core is here, Beam Core Detroit is here. This is aggregating everything, all of things, and this is the new version of Beam Core. And we spent a lot of time, actually we spent 3 months just getting this gap. And you can see this is not an important gap, it's a huge gap, okay? Because if you look at here, this means 400 seconds, this means, well, slightly less than 200 seconds. So for most distances, we gain a lot by improving the lower and the upper bounds, and this is the topic of what I really present at the SAT conference. So we spend a lot of time getting better ways to get, refine the upper bound and get better lower bounds to get this gap, okay? So, okay, so yeah, more or less, we have lots of time actually. We could have even asked more questions. So, no, okay. Yes? Oh, come on, not you, Fabio. Yes?
So maybe I missed something when you talk about this joint coordinate that I was thinking, and you said already, but in your example, first you find one core.
Yes.
And then when you impose a constraint that n minus 1 clause would be satisfied, then you find these joint cores that intersect the first one.
Yes. That's life. But that's different. Sorry, that's what I can I go back? Maybe slide. So this is okay, so I went very fast here, I thought I didn't have time. So there are lots of algorithms. So this the one I explained in more detail is what we call MSU1, some other call. It has been around for a few years. We did a few optimizations. That's the one where you can relax multiple times. The one I just chose with pseudocode are the ones here. Okay, here you just have a single variable. Relaxation then proposed if you need one. So that's a fairly different operation altogether. Okay? So this is the because this is very easy to explain, that's why I decided to use this one. And then here I did the pseudocode for some of them. I did do the most complicated one because it was a lot the pseudocode is much more complicated. And then I showed the result. Yes, so for going back to that example, so first we compute, okay, let me see, very quickly, so I compute an unsat core, I relax the clauses here, then I compute an unsat core, I relax the clauses here. The previous one, Beam Core, would just turn everything in a single, let me go show you the pseudocode. So we put everything in an utmost, it's in this single volume constraint. Now, in this joint, we keep them separate, okay? Well, we keep them separate. Eventually, you might have a problem, and we get the core that aggregates them. Well, then we join them. Okay? But while we can, we keep them separate, and this gives us this boost that I showed. Okay? So that's the idea. Okay, so this is where I was. Conclusions. So the messages. Equivalence between Boolean optimization representations. So I talked about pseudo Boolean and maxstat. I also mentioned weighted Boolean. Everything is equivalent. Again, not a big deal. And then I did an overview of different ways of doing optimization algorithms. So I did pseudo Boolean, maxstat, branch and bound. Very quickly, because again, it's something I don't believe is going to be the future. And then I spent some time on iterative SAT solving, because lots of people still do it. And then I talked about core guided, which some people are now doing it technically. Okay? And I showed the results show that core guided algorithms exhibit some moderate performance edge. Someone before the talk was okay. So this is just on these instances. If you go with random instances, it's a completely picture. Someone before the talk was asking me, so which solver would you recommend? Would you recommend core guided? And the answer is yes, I would recommend core guided, certainly. Would you recommend the most recent one? And I said, not quite, because it's the most robust. Let me go back. It's really, oops, it's the most robust. It's really very robust these days. But if you look for very specific industrial instances, where is it? This one is probably, one of these is probably better. For most industrial problems, we solve it, so we have to be honest about it. And we say this, of course, in the paper. So, if you want a very robust algorithm, you pick here. If you want a very good algorithm for example, industrial problems, then I'll go, even though here they perform extremely poorly, in some industrial problems they perform extremely well, okay? And actually, if you download my MaxSAT solver, so the one that distributes this, by default, it runs this algorithm. Okay? So, because again, if you are trying to solve an industrial problem, it's the one that's more, we believe it's more suited. again, it's not the most worst, but it's the most suited. Okay, so let's see. Now, so the research directions, because of course this is for people that are doing active research in the area and are starting to do it. So what can you do for the future? There are, I think there are lots of things that can be done. I'm not, some of these, I don't know how to do them. So for random mass-up algorithms, possible more algorithms. If I knew how to do them, I would be doing them, so I don't know how to do them, but since there is, there's been a lot of algorithms proposed in recent years, I would expect more to be proposed in the near future. Okay? And the question is, can we do better in terms of robust algorithm than core-guided by research, the algorithm that I have planned here? And I also mentioned this in the theoretical analysis. So what is the worst case number of iterations for some of the algorithms? In some cases, we have some results. We presented them last year, but it's not completely general. So we show that if you have a very dumb subsolver, it will do extremely poorly. But the problem is that subsolvers are everything but dumb. So if you have a very good subsolver, a reasonable subsolver, it's not clear what is going to happen. Okay? So for MaxSat and MaxSAT, I think you can use the same algorithms, but again, there are lots of challenges, not really what you can do here. MaxSat versus MaxSAT, yeah, again, I think this is a very general framework, but it's not clear you can do very efficient algorithms as we do in the area of SAT. And here, not clear, again, MaxSat is very specific, you can solve lots of problems, but it's not the final weapon. So in some cases, you cannot just replace CPLEX or some ALP package, okay? And of course, more practical applications. So people from here might go home and think about applications and might think, yeah, it's not maybe not. And actually, it's not true because these are just a very interesting example. So reasoning over biological networks is going to be presented at CP in September. So it's a very recent application of MaxSat. And error localization C code, I mentioned this at the beginning of the call, it was proposed last year, okay? So, of course, because if you develop more practical applications, that will motivate even better, more efficient algorithms. Okay? So, before I just to say that if you want to, when I distribute, you have all these references, so I try to support most of things with good, well, reasonable or representative references. Thank you very much. More questions? Yes, good. Yes, please go ahead.
The sizes of the instances for MaxSat competition
differ
from the sizes of
similar instances? Well, yeah, it's you can have actually, you can have very, very large instances. Very, very large instances. But it's a different world completely. So you can have instances that have millions and millions of clauses, but you can also have ones that have a few hundred clauses you cannot solve. So, It's a very new area. So it has been around for a few years, but effective algorithms that work well in practice are very recent. They have 5-6 years. So there is a lot of work still to be done. Alessandro?
It would be interesting to know something about not only the accumulated time, but also where does the time go with the different algorithms?
Right. So we have not had that data. So we can share the data easily. We usually do this, so this is an aggregate. Usually what we do is by classes, to be more precise, but not more than that.
Okay.
There was one more question, and then I'm happy to answer afterwards.
So I was going to ask you, you said that with the district court, you try to keep the court separate. Yeah. Does that involve kind of bias?
No. We do live in subsolvers. So we do subsolvers to everything we need, so we just wait for the subsolver to come back. But of course that would be very nice, but it's very difficult to change Armin's code, so I tried it, not easy. So we trust it, okay? Okay, so that's it. If you have any more questions, I'll be here.